This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Second hour of the program. Phones are open if you want to join us. Number 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here in the studio, it's Ian.
Nobody.
And Chris. Join us online anytime you want. Just head on over to freetalklive.com. Chris has a story when we get a chance. We've actually had some good calls here so far tonight. Of course, prefer to hear from you with whatever's on your mind. But Chris has a story about an attack on cryptocurrency happening not in the U.S., but Canada.
And I don't know if it's an attack on cryptocurrency, but maybe indirectly.
We'll get into it. And then also, I've got one from Bulgaria, where they're going after a crypto lending firm called Nexo. So we can get into those stories. But, of course, your calls and thoughts are welcome. Let's go to the phones. And to the phone, we got Dave Ridley on the line from Ridley Report. Hey, Dave. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. So the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance it gets the subtlety award for the month. They have made a declaration, a ruling, or a declaration, whatever you want to call it, that has increased my faith in them, which is already pretty high. But so there's this problem with Liberty Bill, or people will submit a Liberty Bill. Our plan is to force the government to spend more money on liberty, or we're going to force people not to engage in activities with each other that we think are not pro freedom. Attempts to restrict unions or attempts to make public schools do certain things that might be pro-freedom, but they cost more tax dollars, right? So oftentimes you'll find liberty organizations just jump right on that bandwagon and try to, increase that funding for liberty, right? But the Liberty Alliance didn't do that in this case here. So there's this bill called House Bill 102, quote-unquote, requiring high schools to include instruction on the nature and history of communism, unquote. And to my pleasant surprise, the Liberty Alliance opposed this, even though on the surface it would seem like it's kind of a pro-freedom thing.
Yeah, well, plus, how are you going to be able to control what all the teachers say about communism? Oh, yeah, sure, we'll instruct the kids on the nature of communism, and then if it's a communist who's the teacher, then obviously they're going to have a different opinion than somebody who is critical of communism as a teacher.
Yeah, and if you think about it, one of the things that liberals are upset about in New Hampshire these days is that, or progressives or whatever you want to call them, they're upset about, liberty folks have been associated, rightly or wrongly, with these new restrictions on teaching critical race theory. Mm-hmm. There's these new bills in New Hampshire, they came law that said, you can't teach critical race theory in the schools. Well, how does that work? How do you stop teachers from opening and closing their mouth on whatever they're thinking? That's just not the place to draw the line.
Yeah, you're bringing up something that has become quite controversial, and essentially it is very hard to enforce, because the only way you would find out what a teacher is saying is if one of the students in the class was to reveal that and essentially, rat them out. So it's been hard for them to enforce that, but essentially it was a big for the conservative types and for the libertarians who backed that particular legislation. It was basically just something that they could pat themselves on the back and, show off to their constituents to pretend like they were doing something about critical race theory.
Well, and I was having a conversation with a progressive dude that I know, and he was saying, this is like a book ban, right? These libertarians are putting a book ban on us practically. And I couldn't argue with him.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I get their argument. Their argument would be that, look, this is the state school system. if you want to teach critical race theory, which is essentially teaching racism, as I understand it. I mean, the idea is that the critical race theory teaches that white people are bad and it's so on and so forth, that, you know, white people are all oppressors, things like that. It's ridiculous nonsense. So, I mean, I agree that it should not be taught. I don't want to see my tax dollars going to teaching that. So I understand their argument is that, look, as long as we're all being coerced into supporting this system, the system shouldn't be teaching kids to be racist, should not teach kids that one race is better than the other. And that's the way the legislation is written. It's not written, as I recall, to specifically, quote-unquote, ban critical race theory, but it bans the teaching that one race is superior to another. And that's not particularly offensive to me from their perspective, but I understand that the counter-arguments, too, is like, well, how can you restrict what teachers say? Well, the answer is they're government school teachers. If you want to teach critical race theory, then take your kids to a private school that teaches critical race theory. So, I mean, I wish they would just propose abolishing the government schools altogether.
Total separation between church and state is so much cleaner.
Yeah, you know what we need is we need a separation between school and state.
I'm sorry, yes. Did I say church? I meant to say school there.
Well, the schools are essentially a government church, right?
Yeah. Right.
They're the Sunday school of...
Yeah, this is sort of like money and state, right? We need to separate money from state.
I think that's where the problem really lies here, Dave, is that these liberty reps are not hardcore enough. We have not gone far enough into getting enough free staters elected to where they feel like they're comfortable actually putting forward some principled legislation like abolishing government schools entirely.
Yeah, or they could just reduce the funding, you know, do a defunding thing, or they could make it impossible to arrest anyone for failing to fund the government school.
Yeah, sure. It's actually interesting that you say that because, as I understand it, the state actually budget has reduced funding to the schools in New Hampshire, and it's more the burden is now more on the local tax dollars as opposed to the state.
Well, yeah, but the state still gets it's not a home rule state, so if the state wants to completely, you know, negate funding,
they could do that. All I'm saying is that they have removed some of the, I guess. However, the state gets its money. They have not. They're not sending as much to the local schools.
Yeah, the locals are mad about it.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, we need more hardcore legislation being proposed. We know it's not going to pass, right? Like, for instance, Matt Santanastasso probably is the most hardcore pro-liberty state rep out there. He got a 100% on the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance ratings last year. He's as of this year, it's his second term as the state representative. He's our nightcap rep, by the way. He used to come out and hang out with us at nightcap here in Keene, and it turns out he's like the most principled guy. He put forward a bill this year, and it's probably going to get hacked up in committee or whatever, but
for sure.
He put forward a bill that would, if passed as originally proposed, would eliminate the war on drugs in New Hampshire. We finally got it after all these years of nibbling at the edges on marijuana. And, oh, we're going to try to decriminalize mushrooms, which I support all that, right? We've never had until now an actual proposal to literally strike from the New Hampshire statutes the entirety of drug prohibition. It would just be gone entirely. And so we'll see how that goes. It'll be interesting to see what kind of results that gets.
Be a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that hearing.
Go ahead.
There are 1,000 hacking at the branches for every one striking at the root.
Indeed, Ridley. Anything else you want to share tonight?
That is all.
Thanks for the call. He does mention, by the way, the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, and we didn't explain for you what that is. Do either of you want to take a crack at explaining the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance?
I'll pass.
So it's an organization that, as far as I know, doesn't exist anywhere else in the United States. They actually are a libertarian created group. They're founded by New Hampshire natives, and I believe some Free Staters, if I recall correctly, founded something like 20 years ago. I believe it was like right at the very beginning of, it may have even been before the Free State Project took New Hampshire as its destination state. So it might have just been natives that found it. But anyway, there's a lot of Free Staters that volunteer for it. And what they do is they actually look at all of the legislation that gets proposed. So in New Hampshire, it's generally like 800 to 1,000 bills every single year. That's a lot of potential legislation to look through. But they look through as much of it as they possibly can with the volunteers that they have. It's a completely volunteer organization. Zeppin, who we've had on the show, is the number one bill review guy. He did almost 400 bills on his own last year. I mean, it's an incredible level of dedication to what is a brutal task of having to actually read legislation. I don't know about you, but I hate reading legalese. And reading legislative.
It's terrible. I do it every once in a while, and it's like,
it's hard. But some people enjoy it. Yeah. And those people who enjoy digging through legislation, they should. If you're a liberty-minded person, you should get active with the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance because they need help. They need as many people to go through these 800. I don't know how many it is this year, but I'm just going to guess somewhere over 800 if it's pretty consistent with previous years. So they read those bills, and they have a system that other liberty-minded programmers have programmed that's an online web form, and you can select a bill you want to review. You can read through the bill, and then it asks you a series of questions about the bill, like, does it affect liberty, positive or negative? And so you sort of give it a score, and then you answer several questions about how or what it does, and that way you can show that you've actually looked at it, and you can answer these questions. And so then that gets submitted. Other people can review that as well, and other people can also review the same bill. So even though you might have already reviewed a bill as, say, negative for liberty, somebody else might be able to come in and say, oh, you're not right about this. Here, you missed this part. It's actually positive for liberty because you read it the wrong way. And so then you have two different reviewers with different opinions. And so it's, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. The more people that can kind of get their eyes on these things, the better. Because sometimes you'll miss something, right? Like, reading legalese is not the easiest thing to do.
Sometimes it's there. Some of these bills are sometimes lengthy, too.
Yeah.
Or not even lengthy, just like, it'll be like 90% of the bill is like, not necessarily great, but it doesn't necessarily have any impact. And then there'll be like this last part at the very bottom of this bill. Like there's this Democrat bill that was like that. And the very last part was great. And it had to do with basically giving people the right to demand the source code for the devices that the government used to create evidence against you. So think of it like a speed camera, right? If they use a speed camera against you to create evidence, well, then you have to be able to, see the sources, and that sources has bugs, and so therefore you can prove in court that evidence is defective, right? And you can't
tell
you
to show you the code. They even then.
Well, this bill would guarantee you that right to see that evidence. And of course, you're never going to see that source code. Mm-hmm. So it basically would mean that all that evidence would have to be thrown
out. The case.
Yeah.
Did that pass?
No. Okay. It was no chance of passing because it had 90% of it. Like the first 90% of it was stuff that was like, it was like a wish list for Democrats, but there was one part in it that was great. If they just cut out the first 90%, libertarians could have gotten behind it.
Well, usually in New Hampshire, usually there's only one subject per bill. You don't get to do a bunch of different things in one
bill. It had stuff in it that was like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was like, I'm trying to think one of the examples. It was like something to the effect of some sort of employment contract thing, and it basically would say, okay, you don't have to comply with the employment contract terms or something. And it was kind of weird because it was very specific to free software developers, and it's like, well, no free
software
developer.
So you're saying
this is
a software related bill.
But it had multiple aspects to it, and it's like nobody who's a free software developer is going to agree to those terms in an employment contract in the first place. So who's this actually going to affect? Nobody. But this last part
I
of this bill
would not agree to those terms.
Right, exactly. And so it's like I wouldn't agree to them either. This is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like free software people aren't going to agree to them, and if this is only applicable to free software people, then there's no point in this bill. I mean, well, except for that last part, right? So it's like, okay, if you pass this, only good things could happen, basically, is how I saw it. But those other parts result in, like, other libertarians not understanding it all and, refusing to go along with it. But this, I think, is a good example of where you could kind of have two different perspectives on things, and sometimes things aren't really, they're not totally black and white, I don't think.
That's true sometimes. So that's one of the things the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance does, is they review the bills, as many of them as they possibly can, hundreds of the several hundred that there are, and then at the end of the year, they do a grading on the state reps. They actually look at how they the reps voted, and there's 400 state reps in New Hampshire. So again, this is a huge undertaking to look at how all 400 of the state reps voted on key bills. They don't look at all 800 bills or whatever. They only look at certain things that they believed would affect liberty, you know, either in a negative or a positive manner. And they come up with a score based on the voting record of each of these individuals, and then they publish those scores in a document that comes out every year, and they pick the top winner, basically, for the Liberty Legislator of the Year award, and they give that out, and so that's a cool thing. So some of these state reps actually want to get a good score, right? Like, this is a badge of honor for them to be pro-liberty, and so it's kind of this incentive for some of the state reps, the more liberty-leaning reps, to be a little more liberty-friendly than they might otherwise be, because they don't want to get a bad score from this relatively influential organization. And the other thing that they do is they take the recommendations that if you were to be one of their bill reviewers, and by the way, you can help the Liberty Alliance if you don't live in New Hampshire. You don't need to live here to read a bill and review it. So if you're looking for a way to help the New Hampshire Freedom Movement from outside of New Hampshire, besides just donating money or whatever, this is a good way to do it. So you may want to get in touch with them. NHLiberty.org is their website. So the final thing they do is they take the reviews that their volunteers create, and then they create every single week during the legislative session, which is only part-time here in New Hampshire. So every week when the full state house comes to meet, when they all 400 of them go into that big reps hall, there's Liberty Alliance volunteers standing outside of the entrances holding what they call the gold standard, which is a bill recommendation sheet. So they've got a summary. They know what bills are going to get voted on that day. And they've got a list of all the bills that are coming up for a vote and whether or not that bill is pro or anti-liberty. And then maybe a little blurb as to why. So for state reps, you know, you can't possibly know what 800 bills are, right? Like, as an individual, you cannot know.
Yeah, I've seen this firsthand having an impact, and it's always interesting. It was interesting, like, a couple times when I've watched it. It's so interesting because you'll see, like, certain reps, like, you can tell what side they're on because they won't take gold standard card, and others will, and it's very entertaining.
Yeah, so they hand out recommendations to the state reps as they walk into the chamber, and in some places, you get that from the parties, right? Like, it's pretty common for the Republicans to tell all the Republicans, all right, well, if you're a good Republican, you'll vote with us on these issues, or the Democrats will say...
That's the job of the whip.
Right. Mm. So they'll say the same thing to their Democrats. But in New Hampshire, you actually have the Libertarians giving voting recommendations out as these people walk in. So I am a huge fan of what they do over at the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance. It's something that would be very hard for anybody, any other liberty movement anywhere to actually do. Where, you know, in other states, good luck putting the volunteer hours together for something like this, putting the technical side of things, because, again, they got a whole system, right? Like, there's a website you go to, you can do the bill reviews, and you can look up stuff, and it's really, really useful. They've even got their own site where you can follow certain bills. Even if you're not a bill reviewer, if you're just a member of the organization, you can, if let's say let's say the bill about ending the war on drugs, I can go on their site, I can put in the bill number and say, I want to watch this bill. And then any time something happens with that bill, I'll get an email. So if the bill gets a vote, if there's a hearing coming up where people can go and speak, I'll find out about that. If the bill gets voted on, I'll find out about that. Like, every step along the way, you can really kind of keep an eye on certain things that you like, which is pretty cool. So check those guys out. They're definitely worth a close look, the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance. Chris, you wanted to talk to us tonight about cryptocurrency, and it ties in with the discussion that we were having, I think it was last night on the show, where the SEC is continuing to file lawsuits against cryptocurrency-related companies, developers. We've, of course, seen them going after Library, which they sadly won the Library case, and they have yet to come up with a settlement there. That's going to likely destroy the Library Corporation, LBRY, unfortunately, but we'll keep you up to date as that situation develops. The SEC is now going after Gemini Exchange and Genesis for creating essentially an earn program where customers could deposit their crypto and get a 5% or something like that APR. They're coming after them, saying those are securities, unregistered securities. But it's not just happening in the United States. Chris, you've got a story out of Canada.
Yeah, that's right. This is a different, a bit of a. I think it's a little bit different, but it's an attack on. Well,
if this is the Canadian version of the SEC, is it not?
About? Yeah, I believe so. But it's a little bit different. Right. So I don't think it's you might say it's an attack on cryptocurrency, but I think it's more of an indirect attack on cryptocurrency because I wouldn't consider Tether to be a cryptocurrency. But
let's hear it. What are they trying to do?
So Crypto.com is reporting, Crypto.com will delist Tether in Canada to comply with Ontario regulator. So it's this exchange said it will no longer facilitate transactions associated with the stablecoin at the end of the month. And I think what's interesting about this is, for those who aren't aware, Tether is, I don't know, maybe you know better than I know you haven't been able to use crypto, Ian, but is Tether still the number one stablecoin?
It is.
It is. Okay, so this is, as I understand it, it's like the thing that people buy in order to then buy other cryptocurrencies. So if you remove it, might have an impact on the market.
Tether right now it's the number three coin overall when you look at market cap size. So Bitcoin, Ethereum, then Tether. And it has a $65.9 billion market cap. The second place stablecoin, which has been gaining on Tether over the last few years, is USDC or USD coin at $43.2 billion. So it's still got a ways, another $20 billion or so to catch up to them. So this is a big attack on cryptocurrency in Canada. I mean, you're downplaying this somewhat, Chris, but and whatever you feel about Tether as its own operation, whether or not it's honest,
I'm not trying to downplay it so much as to make a distinction between the two different things, right? So it's an attack on cryptocurrency overall, maybe, but it's indirect in that it's going after a stable coin that people who trade cryptocurrencies rely on, right? That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's a huge attack on the cryptocurrency industry because people rely on Tether, and now they're going to pull that carpet out from under them.
I just don't like the use of the word cryptocurrency to describe Tether. That's all I'm saying.
Tether is a crypto token. So what Tether is it is a, for listeners that aren't familiar.
Runs on Ethereum, right?
Primarily, but it also runs on, I think, Bitcoin Cash and Solana, and there's a bunch of other cryptos that can have tokens, and there are Tether variants for those as well, but probably the super majority of it is on the Ethereum blockchain. I haven't looked at the breakdown in a while, but I think they're on, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 at least different systems out there. Mm-hmm. So for listeners that aren't familiar, you've got cryptocurrency, which is sort of these what you might call the level one coins. So Bitcoin is an example of that. Ethereum, Dash, whatever, these other cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin Cash. And then some of these coins, Bitcoin is not one of them, Ethereum is. Some of these coins have made it so you can create what they call cryptocurrency tokens on their blockchains. And that means that essentially it's a platform where anybody who wants to can go and just create a token on these platforms. We'll talk a little bit more about that and what that means. And what this is, why this is a huge attack on the cryptocurrency industry, basically sounds like they're trying to ban Tether in Canada. Well, I want to hear more about the story coming up here. The number is 603-283-6160. You can join us.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
You USA News. I'm Dave Collins. Many folks are looking to become a billionaire tonight. The Mega Millions jackpot has surged to $1.35 billion for tonight's drawing. It's the second largest top prize in Mega Millions history. The CDC and the FDA are looking into concerns the Pfizer COVID vaccine causes strokes in those 65 and older. The CDC notes that overall the data suggests it's very unlikely there's a true clinical risk. And Dr. Anthony Fauci is praising the agency for its openness.
I think the important thing to point out is how transparent and upfront the CDC has been.
Broadcaster Al Michaels says calling Thursday night football games this season was like trying to sell a used car. Take the Broncos-Colts game in week 4. He says it was dreadful. Michaels says he tries to echo the feelings of what the fans feel because he's also a fan. Dave Collins, USA News.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Yep, it is Free Talk Live. Phones are open. You can join us. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Coming up tomorrow night, 10:30 Eastern Time, you can join Nobody and a couple of our other show hosts, Captain Kickass, Beakless Mountaineer, for Beard Talk Live. That happens after hours. It is a late-night show starting at 10:30 Eastern Time, only on our video streaming platforms like Odyssey, which you can find over at video.freetalklive.com. No FCC, so it's open phones and open mic, meaning you don't actually have any, we don't even run the dump software. We can't hit the dump button during Beard Talk Live. So be sure to join those guys. And if you can't join them live, you can always just listen to the archive, which appears in our normal podcast, which you can get over at feeds.freetalklive.com. That's feeds.freetalklive.com. We'll talk more about what's going on in Canada, with this situation affecting the Tether quote-unquote crypto. It's not, you know, as you point out, Chris, it's not a true cryptocurrency.
But we may not have a solution to what Tether solves, the problem Tether solves, but I would like to see a technical solution as opposed to a centralized solution.
We can talk about that, too, coming up here in a few minutes. We still have to kind of explain what it is.
Yeah, definitely.
But first, we have Tom in New Hampshire, I believe. Tom, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, good evening. It's about counterfeit postage stamps.
Oh.
It's kind of, well, there's a lot of them, and this has been going on for a few years now. And the Postal Service is aware of it, and they publish, a press release about it and a video about it. What goes on is I'm not talking about legitimate discount postage, which is typically, who wants a whole bunch of 29-cent commemorative stamps? Okay, well, you're lucky if your Uncle Joe passes away and leaves behind all these sheets of, got carried away buying up too many of every new commemorative stamp.
Yeah.
You're lucky to get half the face value, if you're trying to sell them off to dealers and stuff, because nobody collects stamps anymore and there's no demand for them. But I'm talking about rolls of forever stamps. I'm talking about sheets of forever stamps.
Well, right, because some number of years ago they started putting the word forever on the first class stamp, and the claim was, hey, if you buy this at whatever the current rate is for a first class stamp, it'll always be good as a first class stamp. So if you bought a forever stamp at 45 cents, which was only a few years ago, by the way, then you would still be able to put that on an envelope today, even though the stamp price, by the way, is going up again to 63 cents per stamp. So that's what the whole forever thing was.
But what they're doing is they're selling them for 50 cents on the dollar, like rolls of 1,000, or rolls of 100 of them, which should be $60 right now, and selling them for $30 a roll.
You're saying counterfeiters are selling these stamps.
Yeah, the counterfeiters, they say they're being counterfeit in China and smuggled into the United States.
Wow.
And they have caught big batches of them. But I see these websites where they're selling these things for half the face value, and the websites are still there like a month later, 2 months later. I don't know why they're so slow in shutting them down. But just let me point something out to people that when you take a look at those websites and they're offering them for 50 cents on the dollar, and you want, are these ones real or fake? Well, there's illustrations of them, but of course counterfeiters would just put pictures on the website, illustrations made from real postage stamps, and say, this we'll sell you, sheets of this, and it really is a real, it's a picture, but that's not what they're going to sell you. They're going to sell you counterfeits that look a whole lot like that picture.
Out of curiosity, do these stamps actually, these counterfeit ones, do they actually work?
Oh, yeah. So they figured out how to put the phosphorescent tagging on them, and the postal inspectors had need to get into figuring out how to trace these back to get these people to reverse the credit card charges. The little old lady who buys a roll of them to put on the Christmas cards and mail them out. You don't want to throw her in jail. She doesn't know that these are fake, but you want to help her get her money back and charge it back to the counterfeiters. So, and raid the place, for crying out loud. If they're selling counterfeit stamps, take the counterfeit stamps out of there,
Wow, that's interesting. So you said there's some sort of phosphorescence of the stamps? There's some kind of security feature that...
In the 1970s around that time, they started putting this special tagging on every stamp for the purpose of when they're going through the machines, that picks up, there's the corner that has the stamp on it, so that you face the letter this way and you put it through the machine that way, and then it goes through the canceling machine. That's what those were for. But the fake stamps didn't used to have that one until last year.
Ooh,
and
wow.
They started putting that on them, and they're coming out of China in humongous amounts. And, I mean, why not? I mean, if you can get 50 cents for half the value of it.
Amazing.
Then, yeah, they mark them down, and they claim that they're just buying these from businesses that go out of business, mailing houses that went out of business.
You're saying the sites that are, you're saying the websites that are marketing these stamps are marketing this and saying, well, we're just buying these legitimately, these aren't counterfeit. And how would they know necessarily? I mean, maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to prove that they knew that they're counterfeit, especially if they're good counterfeits. But definitely don't patronize those websites. If they're selling them for 50 cents on the dollar and they're the, latest and greatest forever stamps, they're fake. It's too good to be true. But you can still get yesteryear's 29-cent commemoratives that are genuine for 50 cents on the dollar. These are
legitimately. You can get those legitimately.
Stamp shows and stuff because there's just no demand for those inconvenient denominations, and you know that's what that's about.
Wow. So basically, what you're saying is the U.S. Postal Service, by introducing the forever stamp, killed the demand for the old denominations because who wants those things? Who wants to deal with totaling up the number, getting the right number of stamps on? Oh, you need an extra 1 cent stamp. Hmm?
I do it.
Well, yeah, but you're a dork.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Tom. The number here is 60. But interesting call, I will say that. I mean, that's I'd seen a headline about the counterfeit stamps recently. I did not realize that they were actually.
Most people just don't send out enough letters to
these days. Yeah,
to warrant worrying about or buying up discounted stamps in the first place.
Great point. If you want to join the show here, the number is 603-283-6160. It does bring up a story that I had in show prep here, and that is that the price of the stamps are going up again, according to CNET, as of January 22nd. First class stamps are going up from 60 cents to 63 cents. I thought they were 55. I didn't even know they were going, I didn't even know about the increase to 60 cents.
I had no idea what the price of stamp will go for these days.
And ship stuff out for a living.
I do, but it's, you know what it is? Usually I don't take care of the actual stamping, so I just get a bill for that. And then, as far as packages, you're not going to use stamps to send out a $3 or $4 package. You're just going to
print
that out with the postage already on it. So, yeah.
Apparently, it was the last time it was 55 cents was in 2021 when they raised it in January to 55 cents. It then went to 58 in August of 2021 to 60. July of the following year, and then this year it's going up to 63 cents. So the last time, I remember when it was like 45 cents, that was a decade ago. So it's gone up almost 50% in the last 10 years.
I probably would have guessed it was like 44 or 45 cents last time I remember hearing about it.
Yeah. So there you go. There's that news. All right. So we were talking about other money-related things. Your story, Chris, is about Canada, where their version of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, some sort of similar name in Canada, has targeted cryptocurrency exchange Crypto.com and maybe some others with a threat regarding Tether. What's going on?
Yeah, so Tether is basically a centralized, it's backed by a centralized corporation.
Yes.
And
it's considered a so-called stable coin. And the idea is that for each Tether, there's $1 supposedly that this corporation has in a vault or a bank account somewhere, and the problem with the Tether Corporation is they've never allowed allowed a third party audit supposedly of their reserves. So we really don't know. There's like a big question mark about the Tether company.
People may be relying on false promises basically in that regard. So, but you basically are paying $1 per Tether, right?
And that's what you would pay on the market for a Tether.
They're giving you $1 per Tether, I guess, if you try to cash out, so to speak. So,
but they won't, because Tether will not take retail customers for cash outs. You can only cash out through crypto exchanges who accept Tether.
Okay.
Tether's corporation will only accept big players for potential cash outs, as I understand it.
Interesting.
Yes. You don't just get to ring them up and say, I got 10 Tether. Can I get $10 in my bank? It doesn't happen.
So basically, cryptocurrency is, it's decentralized. What I would call a cryptocurrency is decentralized, and you're basically, at least the ones that are out there are generally, their value is sort of based on what the market will allow, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
They're based
That's
on
a
the
true
demand.
Original cryptocurrency.
Right, right. So people will buy these Tether in order to trade cryptocurrencies, trade for other cryptocurrencies, basically, like actual cryptocurrencies. So, okay, so cryptocurrency exchange Crypto.com will no longer facilitate transactions involving Tether in Canada, just to be clear, and plans to delist the largest stablecoin by market capitalization for customers in the region. Crypto.com has delisted the USDT for users in Canada in accordance with instructions from the Ontario they call it the Securities Commission, not Securities Exchange Commission. I think I may have said
probably
that
the
earlier.
Same thing.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. As part of our pre-registration undertaking for a restricted dealer license, a spokesman from Crypto.com told Decrypt. So apparently that's what's going on. So Canada is putting some sort of new regulation in, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian users of the exchange were notified about the company's change in policy on Tuesday via email as images of the delisting notice began to crop up on both Reddit and Twitter. This is the interesting part. The notice stated Crypto.com supported Tether will end on January 31st without specifically stating users in Canada would only be affected. So people were thinking this was like everywhere, right? Mm. And remember, Tether is sort of the back, it's the cornerstone of the whole crypto world. At least
of the crypto exchanges.
Crypto trading world, I think, is the way to phrase it.
Yeah.
People who invest in it, so to speak. Prompting confusion on behalf of some on social media, the exchange warned users that all trading, deposits, and withdrawals will not be facilitated after the deadline. Please take urgent action to review your USDT balance and take necessary action, the notice stated. Any remaining USDT balances would automatically be converted to Circle's USD coin, which is another stable coin.
Did they say, maybe it's coming up, but do they explain why they're going after Tether as opposed to going after all stable coins?
There's some sort of registration that has to occur, so they probably just need Tether time in order to jump through the hoops, I'm guessing.
Or maybe
they just don't want to jump through those hoops, right? Mm-hmm. Canada's not the biggest market. It's a small country population-wise, so maybe it's just too much regulation for them to bother.
Okay.
And there are apparently other stable coins that they can use. So,
yes, there are.
Yeah. Tether is the third largest digital asset by market capitalization, and crypto is the largest stable coin, according to data from CoinGecko, with a total value of $66 billion, as you were saying earlier.
Yep.
USD coin currently is second among stable coins at nearly $43 billion in total value, but gained ground against Tether last year. Well, if this keeps up, they may outdo it here shortly. Stable coins play an integral role in crypto ecosystem, giving people an option to swap cryptocurrencies for a more stable store of value, which I hate that word. It's a declining, store of value.
And stable with you can only be stable with respect to something else.
Yeah, right. That's true, right. Yeah.
So you know that it's stable in relation to the dollar.
You know that the dollar is going to go down over time. But the odds that the dollar is going to crash 10% overnight,
that's true,
relatively slim.
And the chances,
so you know that you...
Well, it does happen. That's what happens when Bitcoin goes up 10% in a night.
I was going to say, the chances of it going upward are zero, right? So I don't think... Has it ever gone up? I think it's always gone down, right?
The value of the dollar?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like...
Yeah, it just goes down.
Yeah, so...
If you ever hear the media saying, the dollar's up... They're comparing it to other fiat currencies.
Right, right.
So it's just a race to the bottom for all of them.
Right. Let's see. For a more stable store of value without converting digital assets into so-called fiat money, such as the U.S. dollar.
Right. So this is the value. And it took me a long time to figure out the value of stable coins because I couldn't understand it early on. Like, why would someone want a digital version of the dollar?
I get it, but you're a great person to explain it.
The reason is, at some point was if you are on an exchange, which I'm not allowed to be due to my crypto restrictions on my bail conditions, but if you're on an exchange and you have, let's say, Bitcoin, and you are of the belief that Bitcoin is going to fall in value, then what you would do, and of course you have no idea what the future is going to hold, so this is just your belief, right? Like, you believe Bitcoin's going to go down, so what you do is you sell your Bitcoin on the exchange for Tether or USDC or one of these other stable coins. You get, let's say Bitcoin's at $20,000. Right now, actually, Bitcoin's above $20,000 today. It's been going up over the last 24 hours.
Doing well.
Nice.
But let's say it's $20,000, but you think it's going to crash. This is a dead cat bounce. This Bitcoin is going down to $10,000. That's your belief. So you sell it at what you consider to be the top of $20,000, and you get 20,000 Tether. Okay? And that's in your exchange account. And then if it comes true and the Bitcoin crashes after when you thought it was going to, Bitcoin goes all the way down to 11,000 or 10,000 or even 15,000. Wherever it ends up going down to, you now have 20,000 Tether, and Bitcoin is now $15,000. Now Bitcoin's $12,000, and then you can say, go back in. You say you think you're at the bottom at 12,000. So then you take the 20,000 Tether and you buy Bitcoin with that. And so now you can have a whole Bitcoin again for only $12,000, and you have some Tether left over. Or you can buy with all your 20,000. Now you have more than one Bitcoin, if that makes sense. So that's kind of what people do with this stuff, is they basically play trading games, essentially, with it.
I think there's another aspect to this, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe you just explained it and I just kind of went over my head. But it's, you're not paying the fees that you would pay to actually get U.S. dollars versus, Tether. What would it cost to move from Bitcoin to Tether?
When I was using Bittrex, it was 0.25%.
Very small amount.
And what would it be for, say, converting to U.S. dollars?
Well, some of these exchanges have U.S. dollar on the exchange as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do the same thing. It would be the same cost. But you can't move those off of the exchanges. If you wanted to take your dollars to another exchange, they would need to be in Tether format or something like that.
Or to just an ordinary wallet.
I was thinking to a bank account maybe, but...
Well, that would be whatever a wire transfer would cost in that case.
Okay.
$30 or...
So then it wouldn't charge a fee on top of that in order to take your USDs off the exchange?
I don't think so. I don't think most of them would charge an additional fee. But then, of course, if the dollars are off the exchange, then you can't easily buy the Bitcoin back, right? So the Tether makes it easy to go from one to the other in an instant, essentially.
Ah, so that instant is the main value there, as opposed to the dollars are not instant.
Well, again, if you have... So some of the exchanges have USD, meaning they represent an actual dollar that the exchange itself has in a bank account. And those are instant trades on the exchange. But you can't take USD off of the exchange in any sort of meaningful sense. You can't take a USD...
So it's sort of a security... it's sort of something from a security perspective in that if your exchange dies and you had Tether on it, you lose that Tether. But if you have it in your own wallet, you don't?
No, I think we're
You can move Tether into your own wallet,
yes.
In which case you would not be affected by a bankruptcy of the exchange.
What I was trying to explain is
you would be affected by a bankruptcy of Tether.
Right, that's what I was trying to explain is
right.
The difference. If you're on an exchange, like, let's say Kraken, you can put dollars onto the exchange on Kraken, and you can trade with dollars on the Kraken exchange. But you cannot withdraw the dollars from Kraken to another your own crypto wallet, right? That you can only withdraw via wire transfer to your bank account,
right,
to get dollars out. Tether, you can withdraw from the exchange to your own wallet, or you can put it on another exchange or whatever. So
right,
Tether makes the dollar more useful.
So it's not speed, it's convenience of moving it around.
It's being the other side of the crypto barrier more than anything else, I think.
It takes the dollar, and the same thing's true for the USD coin and any other stable coin, is it makes the dollar more useful. It makes it more portable. Some of the things...
Portability.
Some of the things that...
that makes sense to me.
Stable coins can benefit certain individuals around the world is if you are in a country where the currency, the fiat currency, is in hyperinflation mode... which the dollar is not yet, supposedly. But if you're in, Zimbabwe or Venezuela or something like that, and you want to convert your local currency into dollars, but you can't physically get dollars, you could get Tether, and you can hold that Tether. So there's like people in China or wherever that are actually holding Tether balances in their crypto wallets to kind of get around the restrictions on being able to use the dollar in China as a way to kind of hedge their bets against the yuan, for instance. So it gives people more options around the world to use fiat currencies. Obviously, we're not fans of fiat currencies in general, but for those that want to deal in them, it expands their repertoire quite a bit.
I've always seen it as a solution to get around problems effectively with, dirty fiat, right? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, most people are not dealing with cryptocurrencies. They're not even dealing with Tether. They're dealing with dollars, right? And so this just seems like a way to, it's a hack to get around some of the issues that the traditional system puts in place.
That is true.
Yeah. I basically used it as a way to short crypto. Like if crypto went way down in an hour, if there is a significant drop in crypto, it's reasonable to assume that over the next few hours it will continue to drop if there's a very large sudden drop, because people will panic sell.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, sure, makes sense.
So basically, if you see a large drop like that and you go into USDT, and then in the morning things look better, you go back into crypto and you've got more Satoshi than you started out with.
All right. Crypto.com's decision to delist Tether follows regulatory clarification from the Canadian Standards. I'm going to repeat that one there. Clarification. Regulatory clarification. Mm. I.e., they probably redefined it.
They made up a new law.
Yeah. From the Canadian Standards Association in December, the update was posted to the Ontario Security Commission's website. The CSA continues to monitor and assess the presence and role of stablecoins in Canadian capital markets, it stated. As a result of this ongoing work, the CSA is of the view that stablecoins or stablecoin arrangements, whatever that means, may constitute securities and or derivatives. So there you go.
That's insane.
Yeah.
How is a stablecoin a security?
I mean, as we discussed last night, they're saying a security is something that is basically representing some sort of value, right? So, I mean,
usually a security gives you some sort of say in something, right? Like you have a stock, so you own a portion of a corporation or whatever. If you have a Tether, you don't get to tell the Tether company how they do their business. You don't get a vote. It's not like a decentralized autonomous organization or something like that.
Hmm.
So they're just calling everything a security. That's what this comes down to.
You're arguing is it's more of a commodity than a security.
It's just a digital representation of somebody that has a dollar in a bank account, and it's tradable online. That's all it is. So they're just going after everything they don't like, and they sure don't like stablecoins. They really don't. They don't like Bitcoin, and they don't like stablecoins because stablecoins make fiat currency more useful. It allows you to send the value of a fiat currency to another individual without having to use the banking system. If I had, which I don't have access to, but if I had Tether and I wanted to send you $20, I could, if you weren't sitting in the room with me where I can just hand you cash, if you're somewhere else, I can just send you over the Tether network, whichever one I want to.
I would prefer cryptocurrency.
I get what you're saying, but I could send you, if you needed dollars,
right.
I could send you dollars. And I don't have to go to the bank. I don't have to sit in a chair for 20 minutes, fill out paperwork, sign paperwork, send a $20 fee along with that.
It's probably more like 45 or more at this point.
So, like, it makes it easier. It takes out the permissionless, you know, or it's mostly permissionless, because one of the problems with the centralized stable coins is they can still undo it
from the
corporate headquarters. They can still pull that money back.
Another difference between stable coins and cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, some cryptos. Anyway, more coming up here in a moment. Hour 3 is on the way. It's Free Talk Live.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences. Too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Both my legs were amputated due to an IED. It's when you start to try to get back into, like, an everyday life. I absolutely felt like I lost some of my purpose. There must be something more. When DAV came into my life, they gave me a new mission. I could still be a productive member of society, could still support a family.
The DAV gave him that sense of structure and purpose again to get his life back together. Visit DAV.org to learn more about our mission.